Oh, Mia Rinaldi. Seeing my blank look, she asked, Don't you remember her? Should I? Was she here when we left?
She's always been here, said Natalie. She's only a year younger than us.
I shot a questioning look at Lissa, who only shrugged. Why is she so pissed off at us? I asked. Neither of us know her.
I don't know, answered Natalie. Maybe she's jealous about Aaron. She wasn't much of anybody when you guys left. She got really popular really fast. She isn't royal or anything, but once she started dating Aaron, she...
Okay, thanks, I interrupted. It doesn't really... My eyes lifted up from Natalie's face to Jesse Zaklos's, just as he passed by our table. Ah, Jesse. I'd forgotten about him. I liked flirting with Mason and some of the other novices, but Jesse was in an entirely different category. You flirted with the other guys simply for the sake of flirting. You flirted with Jesse in the hopes of getting Sammy naked with him. He was a royal moroi, and he was so hot. He should have worn a warning flammable sign. He met my eyes and grinned.
Hey, Rose, welcome back. You still breaking hearts?
Are you volunteering? His grin widened.
Let's hang out sometime and find out, if you ever get parole.
He kept walking, and I watched him admiringly. Natalie and her friends stared at me in awe. I might not be a god in the Dimitri sense, but with this group, Lissa and I were gods, or at least former gods, of another nature.
Oh my god, exclaimed one girl.
I didn't remember her name.
That was Jesse.
Yes, I said, smiling. It certainly was.
I wish I looked like you, she added with a sigh.
Their eyes fell on me. Technically, I was half moroi, but my looks were human. I'd blended in well with humans during our time away, so much so that I'd barely thought about my appearance at all. Here, among the slim and small-chested moroi girls, certain features, meaning my larger breasts and more defined hips, stood out. I knew I was pretty, but to moroi boys, my body was more than just pretty. It was sexy in a risque way. Vampires were an exotic conquest, a novelty all moroi guys wanted to try. It was ironic that vampires had such an allure here, because slender moroi girls looked very much like the super skinny runway models so popular in the human world. Most humans could never reach that ideal skinniness, just as moroi girls could never look like me. Everyone wanted what she couldn't have. Lissa and I got to sit together in our shared afternoon classes, but didn't do much talking. The stares she'd mentioned certainly did follow us, but I found that the more I talked to people, the more they warmed up. Slowly, gradually, they seemed to remember who we were, and the novelty, though not the intrigue, of our crazy stunt wore off. Or maybe I should say they remembered who I was, because I was the only one talking. Lissa stared straight ahead, listening but neither acknowledging nor participating in my attempts at conversation. I could feel anxiety and sadness pouring out of her. All right, I told her when classes finally ended. We stood outside the school, and I was fully aware that in doing so, I was already breaking the terms of my agreement with Kirova. We're not staying here, I told her, looking around the campus uneasily. I'm going to find a way to get us out.
You think we could really do it a second time? Lissa asked quietly.
Absolutely. I spoke with certainty, again relieved she couldn't read my feelings. Escaping the first time had been tricky enough. Doing it again would be a real bitch, not that I couldn't still find a way.
You really would, wouldn't you?
She smiled, more to herself than to me, like she'd thought of something funny.
Of course you would. It's just, well,
she sighed.
I don't know if we should go. Maybe we should stay.
I blinked in astonishment. What? Not one of my more eloquent answers, but the best I could manage. I'd never expected this from her.
I saw you, Rose. I saw you talking to the other novices during class, talking about practice. You missed that.
It's not worth it, I argued. Not if you... I couldn't finish, but she was right. She'd read me. I had missed the other novices, even some of the Moroi. But there was more to it than just that. The weight of my inexperience, how much I'd fallen behind, had been growing all day.
It might be better, she countered. I haven't had as many, you know, things happening in a while. I haven't felt like anyone was following or watching us.
I didn't say anything to that. Before we'd left the academy, she'd always felt like someone was following her, like she was being hunted. I'd never seen evidence to support that, but I had once heard one of our teachers go on and on about the same sort of thing. Ms. Karp. She'd been a pretty Moroi, with deep auburn hair and high cheekbones, and I was pretty sure she'd been crazy.
You never know who's watching,
she used to say, walking briskly around the classroom as she shut all the blinds.
Or who's following you? Best be safe. Best to always be safe.
We'd snickered amongst ourselves, because that's what students do around eccentric and paranoid teachers. The thought of Lissa acting like her bothered me.
What's wrong?
Lissa asked, noticing that I was lost in thought.
Huh?
Nothing, just thinking. I sighed, trying to balance my own wants with what was best for her. Liss, we can stay, I guess. But there are a few conditions. This made her laugh.
A rose ultimatum, huh?
I'm serious. Words I didn't say very much. I want you to stay away from the royals. Not like Natalie or anything, but, you know, the others. The power players, Camille, Carly, that group. Her amusement turned to astonishment.
Are you serious?
Sure, you never liked them anyway.
You did?
No, not really. I liked what they could offer, all the parties and stuff.
And you can go without that now?
She looked skeptical.
Sure, we did in Portland. Yeah, but that was different.
Her eyes stared off, not really focused on any one thing.
Here, I've got to be a part of that. I can't avoid it.
The hell you do. Natalie stays out of that stuff.
Natalie isn't going to inherit her family's title, she retorted. I've already got it. I've got to be involved, start making connections. Andre...
Liss, I groaned. You aren't Andre. I couldn't believe she was still comparing herself to her brother.
He was always involved in all that stuff.
Yeah, well, I snapped back. He's dead now. Her face hardened.
You know, sometimes you aren't very nice.
You don't keep me around to be nice. You want nice, there are a dozen sheep in there who would rip each other's throats to get in good with the Dragomir princess. You keep me around to tell you the truth. And here it is. Andre's dead. You're the heir now, and you're going to deal with it however you can. But for now, that means staying away from the other royals. We'll just lie low. Coast through the middle. Get involved in that stuff again, Liss, and you'll drive yourself
crazy,
she supplied when I didn't finish. Now I looked away.
I didn't mean... It's okay, she said after a moment.
She sighed and touched my arm.
Fine. We'll stay, and we'll keep out of all of that stuff.
We'll coast through the middle like you want. Hang out with Natalie, I guess. To be perfectly honest, I didn't want any of that. I wanted to go to all the royal parties and wild drunken festivities like we'd done before. We'd kept out of that life for years until Liss's parents and brother died. Andre should have been the one to inherit her family's title, and he'd certainly acted like it. Handsome and outgoing, he'd charmed everyone he knew and had been a leader in all the royal cliques and clubs that existed on campus. After his death, Lissa had felt it was her family duty to take his place. I'd gotten to join that world with her. It was easy for me, because I really didn't have to deal with the politics of it. I was a pretty vampire, one who didn't mind getting into trouble and pulling crazy stunts. I became a novelty. They liked having me around for the fun of it. Lissa had to deal with other matters. The Dragomirs were one of the 12 ruling families. She'd have a powerful place in Moroi society, and the other young royals wanted to get in good with her. Fake friends tried to schmooze her and get her to team up against other people. The royals could bribe and backstab in the same breath, and that was just with each other. To dampires and non-royals, they were completely unpredictable. That cruel culture had eventually taken its toll on Lyssa. She had an open, kind nature, one that I loved, and I hated to see her upset and stressed by royal games. She'd grown fragile since the accident, and all the parties in the world weren't worth seeing her hurt. "All right, then," I said finally. "We'll see how this goes. If anything goes wrong, anything at all, we leave. No arguments." She nodded.
"Rose?"
We both looked up at Dimitri's looming form. I hoped he hadn't heard the part about us leaving.
"You're late for practice," he said evenly.
Seeing Lyssa, he gave a polite nod.
"Princess?"
As he and I walked away, I worried about Lyssa and wondered if staying here was the right thing to do. I felt nothing alarming through the bond, but her emotions spiked all over the place. Confusion, nostalgia, fear, anticipation. Strong and powerful, they flooded into me. I felt the pull just before it happened. It was exactly like what had happened on the plane. Her emotions grew so strong that they sucked me into her head before I could stop them. I could now see and feel what she did. She walked slowly around the commons toward the small Russian Orthodox chapel that served most of the school's religious needs. Lyssa had always attended Mass regularly. Not me. I had a standing arrangement with God. I'd agreed to believe in him, barely, so long as he let me sleep in on Sundays. But as she went inside, I could feel that she wasn't there to pray. She had another purpose, one I didn't know about. Glancing around, she verified that neither the priest nor any worshippers were close by. The place was empty. Slipping through a doorway in the back of the chapel, she climbed a narrow set of creaky stairs up into the attic. Here it was dark and dusty. The only light came through a large stained glass window that fractured the faint glow of sunrise into tiny, multicolored gems across the floor. I hadn't known until that moment that this room was a regular retreat for Lyssa, but now I could feel it, feel her memories of how she used to escape here to be alone and to think. The anxiety in her ebbed away ever so slightly as she took in the familiar surroundings. She climbed up into the window seat and leaned her head back against its side, momentarily entranced by the silence and the light. Moroi could stand some sunlight, unlike the Strigoi, but they had to limit their exposure. Sitting here, she could almost pretend she was in the sun, protected by the glass's delusion of the rays. "Breathe. Just breathe," she told herself. "It'll be okay. Rose will take care of everything." She believed that passionately, like always, and relaxed further. Then a low voice spoke from the darkness.
"You can have the academy, but not the window seat."
She sprang up, heart pounding. I shared her anxiety, and my own pulse quickened.
"Who's there?"
A moment later, a shape rose from behind a stack of crates, just outside her field of vision. The figure stepped forward, and in the poor lighting, familiar features materialized. Messy black hair, pale blue eyes, a perpetually sardonic smirk. Christian Ozera.
"Don't worry," he said. "I won't bite. Well, at least not in the way you're afraid of."
He chuckled at his own joke. She didn't find it funny. She had completely forgotten about Christian. So had I. No matter what happened in our world, a few basic truths about vampires remained the same. Moroi were alive. Strigoi were undead. Moroi were mortal. Strigoi were immortal. Moroi were born. Strigoi were made. And there were two ways to make a Strigoi. Strigoi could forcibly turn humans, vampires, or Moroi with a single bite. Moroi, tempted by the promise of immortality, could become Strigoi by choice if they purposely killed another person while feeding. Doing that was considered dark and twisted, the greatest of all sins, both against the Moroi way of life and nature itself. Moroi, who chose this dark path, lost their ability to connect with elemental magic and other powers of the world. That was why they could no longer go into the sun. This is what had happened to Christian's parents. They were Strigoi. Chapter 5. Or, rather, they had been Strigoi. A regiment of guardians had hunted them down and killed them. If rumors were true, Christian had witnessed it all when he was very young. And although he wasn't Strigoi himself, some people thought he wasn't far off, with the way he always wore black and kept to himself. Strigoi or not, I didn't trust him. He was a jerk, and I silently screamed at Lyssa to get out of there. Not that my screaming did much good. Stupid one-way bond.
"What are you doing here?" she asked.
"Taking in the sights, of course. That chair with the tarp on it is particularly lovely this time of year. Over there, we have an old box of the writings of the blessed and crazy Saint Vladimir. And let's not forget that beautiful table with no legs in the corner."
"Whatever."
She rolled her eyes and moved toward the door, wanting to leave, but he blocked her way.
"Well, what about you?"
he taunted.
"Why are you up here? Don't you have parties to go to or lives to destroy?"
Some of Lyssa's old spark returned.
"Wow, that's hilarious. Am I like a rite of passage now? Go and see if you can piss off Lyssa to prove how cool you are? Some girl I don't even know yelled at me today, and now I've got to deal with you? What does it take to be left alone?"
"Oh, so that's why you're up here. For a pity party."
"This isn't a joke. I'm serious."
I could tell Lyssa was getting angry. It was trumping her earlier distress. He shrugged and leaned casually against the sloping wall.
"So am I. I love pity parties. I wish I'd brought the hats. What do you want to mope about first? How it's going to take you a whole day to be popular and loved again? How you'll have to wait a couple weeks before Hollister can ship out some new clothes? If you spring for rush shipping, it might not be so long."
"Let me leave," she said angrily, this time pushing him aside.
"Wait,"
he said, as she reached the door. The sarcasm disappeared from his voice.
What was it like?"
"What was what like?" she snapped.
"Being out there, away from the academy."
She hesitated for a moment before answering, caught off guard by what seemed like a genuine attempt at conversation.
"It was great. No one knew who I was. I was just another face. Not Moroi, not royal, not anything."
She looked down at the floor.
"Everyone here thinks they know who I am."
"Yeah, it's kind of hard to outlive your past," he said bitterly.
It occurred to Lyssa at that moment, and me too by default, just how hard it might be to be Christian. Most of the time, people treated him like he didn't exist, like he was a ghost. They didn't talk to or about him. They just didn't notice him. The stigma of his parents' crime was too strong, casting its shadow onto the entire Ozera family. Still, he'd pissed her off, and she wasn't about to feel sorry for him.
"Wait, is this your pity party now?"
He laughed almost approvingly.
"This room has been my pity party for a year now."
"Sorry," said Lyssa snarkily. "I was coming here before I left. I've got a longer claim."
"Squatter's rights. Besides, I have to make sure I stay near the chapel as much as possible, so people know I haven't gone Strigoi. Yet."
Again, the bitter tone rang out.
"I used to always see you at Mass. Is that the only reason you go? To look good?"
"Strigoi couldn't enter holy ground. More of that sinning against the world thing."
"Sure," he said. "Why else go? For the good of your soul?"
"Whatever," said Lyssa, who clearly had a different opinion. "I'll leave you alone, then."
"Wait,"
he said again. He didn't seem to want her to go.
"I'll make you a deal. You can hang out here, too, if you tell me one thing."
"What?"
She glanced back at him. He leaned forward.
Of all the rumors I heard about you today, and believe me, I heard plenty, even if no one actually told them to me, there was one that didn't come up very much. They dissected everything else. Why you left, what you did out there, why you came back, the specialization, what Rose said to Mia, blah, blah, blah. And in all of that, no one ever questioned that stupid story that Rose told about there being all sorts of fringe humans who let you take blood. She looked away, and I could feel her cheeks starting to burn.
It's not stupid. Or a story.
He laughed softly.
I've lived with humans. My aunt and I stayed away after my parents died. It's not that easy to find blood.
When she didn't answer, he laughed again.
It was Rose, wasn't it? She fed you.
A renewed fear shot through both her and me. No one at school could know about that. Kirova and the guardians on the scene knew, but they'd kept that knowledge to themselves.
Well, if that's not friendship, I don't know what is, he said.
You can't tell anyone, she blurted out.
This was all we needed. As I'd just been reminded, feeders were vampire bite addicts. We accepted that as part of life, but still looked down on them for it. For anyone else, especially a vampire, letting a Moroi take blood from you was almost, well, dirty. In fact, one of the kinkiest, practically pornographic things a vampire could do was let a Moroi drink blood during sex. Listen, I hadn't had sex, of course, but we'd both known what others would think of me feeding her.
Don't tell anyone, Lyssa repeated.
He stuffed his hands in his coat pockets and sat down on one of the crates.
Who am I going to tell? Look, go grab the window seat. You can have it today and hang out for a while, if you're not still afraid of me.
She hesitated, studying him. He looked dark and surly, lips curled in a sort of I'm such a rebel smirk. But he didn't look too dangerous.
He didn't look Strigoi.
Gingerly, she sat back down in the window seat, unconsciously rubbing her arms against the cold. Christian watched her, and a moment later the air warmed up considerably. Lyssa met Christian's eyes and smiled, surprised she'd never noticed how icy blue they were before.
You specialized in fire?
He nodded and pulled up a broken chair.
Now we have luxury accommodations.
I snapped out of the vision.
Rose? Rose.
Blinking, I focused on Dimitri's face. He was leaning toward me, his hands gripping my shoulders. I'd stopped walking. We stood in the middle of the quad separating the upper school buildings.
Are you all right?
I was with Lyssa. I put a hand to my forehead. I'd never had such a long or clear experience like that. I was in her head.
Her head?
Yeah, it's part of the bond. I didn't really feel like elaborating.
Is she all right?
Yeah, she's... I hesitated. Was she all right? Christian Ozera had just invited her to hang out with him. Not good. There was coasting through the middle, and then there was turning to the dark side. But the feelings humming through our bond were no longer scared or upset. She was almost content, though still a little nervous. She's not in danger, I finally said.
I hoped. Can you keep going?
The hard, stoic warrior I'd met earlier was gone, just for a moment, and he actually looked concerned. Truly concerned. Feeling his eyes on me like that made something flutter inside of me, which was stupid, of course. I had no reason to get all goofy, just because the man was too good-looking for his own good. After all, he was an antisocial god, according to Mason, one who was supposedly going to leave me in all sorts of pain. Yeah, I'm fine. I went into the gym's dressing room and changed into the workout clothes someone had finally thought to give me after a day of practicing in jeans and a t-shirt. Gross. Lyssa hanging out with Christian troubled me, but I shoved that thought away for later, as my muscles informed me they did not want to go through any more exercise today. So I suggested to Dimitri
that maybe he should let me off this time. He laughed, and I was pretty sure it was at me, not with me.
Why is that funny?
Oh, he said, his smile dropping. You were serious.
Of course I was. Look, I've technically been awake for 2 days. Why do we have to start this training now? Let me go to bed, I whined. It's just 1 hour.
He crossed his arms and looked down at me. His earlier concern was gone. He was all business now. Tough love.
How do you feel right now, after the training you've done so far?
I hurt like hell.
You'll feel worse tomorrow.
So?
So, better to jump in now while you still feel not as bad.
What kind of logic is that? I retorted. But I didn't argue anymore as he led me into the weight room.
He showed me the weights and reps he wanted me to do, then sprawled in a corner with a battered Western novel. Some god. When I finished, he stood beside me and demonstrated a few cool-down stretches.
How'd you end up as Lissa's guardian? I asked. You weren't here a few years ago. Were you even trained at this school?
He didn't answer right away. I got the feeling he didn't talk about himself very often.
No, I attended the one in Siberia.
Whoa, that's got to be the only place worse than Montana. A glint of something, maybe amusement, sparked in his eyes, but he didn't acknowledge the joke.
After I graduated, I was guardian for a Zelklos lord. He was killed recently.
His smile dropped. His face grew dark.
They sent me here because they needed extras on campus. When the princess turned up, they assigned me to her, since I'd already be around. Not that it matters until she leaves campus.
I thought about what he'd said before. Some Strigoi killed the guy he was supposed to have been guarding? Did this lord die on your watch?
No. He was with his other guardian. I was away.
He fell silent, his mind obviously somewhere else. The Moroi expected a lot from us, but they did recognize that the guardians were, more or less, only human. So guardians got pay and time off like you get in any other job. Some hardcore guardians, like my mom, refused vacations, vowing never to leave their Moroi's sides. Looking at Dimitri now, I had a feeling he might very well turn into one of those. If he'd been away on legitimate leave, he could hardly blame himself for what happened to that guy. Still, he probably did anyway. I'd blame myself, too, if something happened to Lissa.
Hey, I said, suddenly wanting to cheer him up. Did you help come up with a plan to get us back? Because it was pretty good, brute force and all that.
He arched an eyebrow curiously.
Cool. I'd always wished I could do that.
You're complimenting me on that?
Well, it was a hell of a lot better than the last one they tried.
Last one?
Yeah, in Chicago, with the pack of Psyhounds.
This was the first time we found you, in Portland.
I sat up from my stretches and crossed my legs.
I don't think I imagined Psyhounds. Who else could have sent them?
They only answer to Moroi. Maybe no one told you about it.
Maybe,
he said dismissively. I could tell by his face he didn't believe that. I returned to the novices' dorm after that. The Moroi students lived on the other side of the quad, closer to the commons. The living arrangements were partly based on convenience. Being here kept us novices closer to the gym and training grounds. But we also lived separately to accommodate the differences in Moroi and Dampire lifestyles. Their dorm had almost no windows, aside from tinted ones that dimmed sunlight. They also had a special section where feeders always stayed on hand. The novices' dorm was built in a more open way, allowing for more light. I had my own room because there were so few novices, let alone girls. The room they'd given me was small and plain, with a twin bed and a desk with a computer. My few belongings had been spirited out of Portland, and now sat in boxes around the room. I rummaged through them, pulling out a t-shirt to sleep in. I found a couple of pictures as I did, one of Lissa and me at a football game in Portland, and another taken when I'd gone on vacation with her family, a year before the accident. I set them on my desk and booted up the computer.
Someone from tech support had helpfully given me a sheet with instructions for renewing my email account and setting up a password. I did both, happy to discover no one had realized that this would serve as a way for me to communicate with Lissa. Too tired to write her now, I was about to turn everything off when I noticed I already had a message from Janine Hathaway. It was short. "I'm glad you're back. What you did was inexcusable." "Love you too, Mom," I muttered, shutting it all down. When I went to bed afterward, I passed out before even hitting the pillow, and just as Dimitri had predicted, I felt 10 times worse when I woke up the next morning. Lying there in bed, I reconsidered the perks of running away. Then I remembered getting my ass kicked and figured the only way to prevent that from happening again was to go endure some more of it this morning. My soreness made it all that much worse, but I survived the before-school practice with Dimitri and my subsequent classes without passing out or fainting. At lunch, I dragged Lisa away from Natalie's table early and gave her a Karova-worthy lecture about Christian, particularly chastising her for letting him know about our blood arrangement. If that got out, it'd kill both of us socially, and I didn't trust him not to tell. Lissa had other concerns.
"You were in my head again?" she exclaimed. "For that long?"
"I didn't do it on purpose," I argued. "It just happened, and that's not the point. How long did you hang out with him afterward?"
"Not that long. It was kind of fun."
"Well, you can't do it again. If people find out you're hanging out with him, they'll crucify you." I eyed her warily. "You aren't, like, into him, are you?" She scoffed.
"No, of course not."
"Good. Because if you're going to go after a guy, steal Aaron back. He was boring, yes, but safe. Just like Natalie. How come all the harmless people were so lame? Maybe that was the definition of safe." She laughed.
"Mia would claw my eyes out."
"We can take her. Besides, he deserves someone who doesn't shop at Gap Kids."
"Rose, you've got to stop saying things like that."
"I'm just saying what you won't."
"She's only a year younger," said Lissa. She laughed. "I can't believe you think I'm the one who's going to get us in trouble."
Smiling as we strode toward class, I gave her a sidelong glance. "Aaron does look pretty good, though, huh?" She smiled back and avoided my eyes.
"Yeah, pretty good."
"Ooh, you see, you should go after him."
"Whatever. I'm fine being friends now."
"Friends who used to stick their tongues down each other's throats." She rolled her eyes. "Fine." I let my teasing go. "Let Aaron stay in the nursery school. Just so long as you stay away from Christian. He's dangerous."
"You're overreacting. He's not going strigoi.
He's a bad influence." She laughed.
"You think I'm in danger of going strigoi?"
She didn't wait for my answer, instead pushing ahead to open the door to our science class. Standing there, I uneasily replayed her words, and then followed a moment later. When I did, I got to see royal power in action. A few guys with giggling, watching girls were messing with a gangly-looking moroi. I didn't know him very well, but I knew he was poor, and certainly not royal. A couple of his tormentors were air magic users, and they'd blown the papers off his desk and were pushing them around the room on currents of air while the guy tried to catch them. My instincts urged me to do something, maybe go smack one of the air users, but I couldn't pick a fight with everyone who annoyed me, and certainly not a group of royals, especially when Lissa needed to stay off their radar, so I could only give them a look of disgust as I walked to my desk. As I did, a hand caught my arm. Jesse. "Hey," I said jokingly. Fortunately, he didn't appear to be participating in the torture session. "Hands off the merchandise." He flashed me a smile but kept his hand on me.
"Rose, tell Paul about the time you started the fight in Miss Karp's class."
I cocked my head toward him, giving him a playful smile. "I started a lot of fights in her class."
"The one with the hermit crab. And the gerbil."
I laughed, recalling it. "Oh, yeah. It was a hamster, I think. I just dropped it into the crab's tank and they were both worked up from being so close to me, so they went at it. Paul, a guy sitting nearby whom I didn't really know, chuckled too. He'd transferred last year, apparently, and hadn't heard of this.
Who won?
I looked at Jesse quizzically. I don't remember, do you?
No, I just remember Cart freaking out.
He turned toward Paul.
Man, you should have seen this messed up teacher we used to have. Used to think people were after her, and would go off on stuff that didn't make any sense. She was nuts. Used to wander campus while everyone was asleep.
I smiled tightly, like I thought it was funny. Instead, I thought back to Ms. Karp again, surprised to be thinking about her for the second time in 2 days. Jessie was right. She had wandered campus a lot when she still worked here. It was pretty creepy. I'd run into her once, unexpectedly. I'd been climbing out of my dorm window to go hang out with some people. It was after hours, and we were all supposed to be in our rooms, fast asleep. Such escape tactics were a regular practice for me. I was good at them. But I fell that time. I had a second-floor room, and I lost my grip about halfway down. Sensing the ground rush up toward me, I tried desperately to grab hold of something and slow my fall. The building's rough stone tore into my skin, causing cuts I was too preoccupied to feel. I slammed into the grassy earth, back first, getting the wind knocked out of me.
Bad form, Rosemary. You should be more careful. Your instructors would be disappointed.
Peering through the tangle of my hair, I saw Ms. Karp looking down at me, a bemused look on her face. Pain, in the meantime, shot through every part of my body. Ignoring it as best I could, I clambered to my feet. Being in class with Crazy Karp, while surrounded by other students, was one thing. Standing outside alone with her was an entirely different matter. She always had an eerie, distracted gleam in her eye that made my skin break out in goosebumps. There was also now a high likelihood that she'd drag me off to Kirova for detention. Scarier still. Instead, she just smiled and reached for my hands. I flinched, but I let her take them. She tisked when she saw the scrapes. Tightening her grip on them, she frowned slightly. A tingle burned my skin, laced with a sort of pleasant buzz, and then the wounds closed up. I had a brief sense of dizziness. My temperature spiked. The blood disappeared, as did the pain in my hip and leg. Gasping, I jerked my hands away. I'd seen a lot of Moroi magic, but never anything like that.
What did you do?
She gave me that weird smile again.
Go back to your dorm, Rose. There are bad things out here. You never know what's following you.
I was still staring at my hands. But I looked back up at her, and for the first time noticed scars on the sides of her forehead, like nails had dug into them. She winked.
I won't tell on you if you don't tell on me.
I jumped back to the present, unsettled by the memory of that bizarre night. Jesse, in the meantime, was telling me about a party.
You've got to slip your leash tonight. We're going up to that spot in the woods around 8:30. Mark got some weed.
I sighed wistfully, regret replacing the chill I'd felt over the memory of Ms. Karp. Can't slip that leash. I'm with my Russian jailer. He let go of my arm, looking disappointed, and ran a hand through his bronze-colored hair. Yeah, not being able to hang out with him was a damned shame. I really would have to fix that someday.
Can't you ever get off for good behavior?
He joked. I gave him what I hoped was a seductive smile as I found my seat. Sure, I called over my shoulder. If I was ever good. Chapter 6. As much as Lissa and Christian's meeting bothered me, it gave me an idea the next day. Hey, Kirova, Ms. Kirova. I stood in the doorway of her office, not having bothered to make an appointment. She raised her eyes from some paperwork, clearly annoyed to see me.
Yes, Miss Hathaway.
Does my house arrest mean I can't go to church?
I beg your pardon.
You said that whenever I'm not in class or practice, I have to stay in the dorm. But what about church on Sundays?
I don't think it's really fair to keep me away from my religious, needs. Or deprive me of another chance, no matter how short and boring, to hang out with Lyssa. She pushed her glasses up the bridge of her nose.
I wasn't aware you had any religious needs.
I found Jesus while I was gone.
Isn't your mother an atheist?
She asked skeptically. And my dad's probably Muslim, but I've moved on to my own path. You shouldn't keep me from it. She made a noise that sort of sounded like a snicker.
No, Miss Hathaway, I should not. Very well. You may attend services on Sundays.
The victory was short-lived, however, because church was every bit as lame as I remembered when I attended a few days later. I did get to sit next to Lyssa, though, which made me feel like I was getting away with something. Mostly, I just people-watched. Church was optional for students, but with so many Eastern European families, a lot of students were Eastern Orthodox Christians and attended either because they believed or because their parents made them. Christian sat on the opposite side of the aisle, pretending to be just as holy as he'd said. As much as I didn't like him, his fake faith still made me smile. Dimitri sat in the back, face lined with shadows, and, like me, didn't take communion. As thoughtful as he looked, I wondered if he even listened to the service. I tuned in and out.
"Following God's path is never easy," the priest was saying. "Even Saint Vladimir, this school's own patron saint, had a difficult time. He was so filled with spirit that people often flocked around him, enthralled just to listen and be in his presence. So great was his spirit, the old texts say, that he could heal the sick. Yet, despite these gifts, many did not respect him. They mocked him, claiming he was misguided and confused."
Which was a nice way of saying Vladimir was insane. Everyone knew it. He was one of a handful of Moroi saints, so the priest liked to talk about him a lot. I'd heard all about him many times over before we left. Great. It looked like I had an eternity of Sundays to hear his story over and over again.
"And so it was with Shadow-Kissed Anna."
I jerked my head up. I had no idea what the priest was talking about now, because I hadn't been listening for some time. But those words burned into me. Shadow-kissed. It had been a while since I'd heard them, but I'd never forgotten them. I waited, hoping he'd continue, but he'd already moved on to the next part of the service. The sermon was over. Church concluded, and as Lyssa turned to go, I shook my head at her. "Wait for me. I'll be right there." I pushed my way through the crowd up to the front, where the priest was speaking with a few people. I waited impatiently while he finished. Natalie was there asking him about volunteer work she could do.
Ugh.
When she finished, she left, greeting me as she passed. The priest raised his eyebrows when he saw me.
"Hello, Rose. It's nice to see you again."
"Yeah, you too," I said. "I heard you talking about Anna. About how she was shadow-kissed. What does that mean?" He frowned.
"I'm not entirely sure. She lived a very long time ago. It was often common to refer to people by titles that reflected some of their traits. It might have been given to make her sound fierce."
I tried to hide my disappointment. "Oh, so who was she?" This time his frown was disapproving rather than thoughtful.
"I mentioned it a number of times."
"Oh, I must have, missed that." His disapproval grew, and he turned around.
"Wait just a moment."
He disappeared through the door near the altar, the one Lyssa had taken to the attic. I considered fleeing, but thought God might strike me down for that. Less than a minute later, the priest returned with a book. He handed it to me. Moroi Saints.
"You can learn about her in here. The next time I see you, I'd like to hear what you've learned."
I scowled as I walked away. Great. Homework from the priest. In the chapel's entryway, I found Lyssa talking to Aaron. She smiled as she spoke, and the feelings coming off her were happy, though certainly not infatuated.
"You're kidding," she exclaimed.
He shook his head.
Nope.
Seeing me stroll over, she turned to me.
Rose, you're never going to believe this. You know Abby Badika and Xander? Their guardian wants to resign and marry another guardian.
Now this was exciting gossip. A scandal, actually.
Seriously? Are they, like, going to run off together?
She nodded.
They're getting a house. Going to get jobs with humans, I guess.
I glanced at Aaron, who had suddenly turned shy with me there. How are Abby and Xander dealing with that?
Okay. Embarrassed. They think it's stupid.
Then he realized who he was speaking to.
Oh, I didn't mean...
Whatever. I gave him a tight smile.
It is stupid.
Wow. I was stunned. The rebellious part of me loved any story where people fought the system. Only in this case, they were fighting my system, the one I'd been trained to believe in my entire life. Dampires and Moroi had a strange arrangement. Dampires had originally been born from Moroi mixing with humans. Unfortunately, dampires couldn't reproduce with each other, or with humans. It was a weird genetic thing. Mules were the same way I'd been told, though that wasn't a comparison I really liked hearing. Dampires and full Moroi could have children together, and, through another genetic oddity, their kids came out as standard dampires, with half-human genes, half-vampire genes. With Moroi being the only ones with whom dampires could reproduce, we had to stay close to them and intermingle with them. Likewise, it became important to us that the Moroi simply survived. Without them, we were done. And with the way Strigoi loved picking off Moroi, their survival became a legitimate concern for us. That was how the Guardian system developed. Dampires couldn't work magic, but we made great warriors. We'd inherited enhanced senses and reflexes from our vampire genes and better strength and endurance from our human genes. We also weren't limited by a need for blood or trouble with sunlight. Sure, we weren't as powerful as the Strigoi, but we trained hard, and Guardians did a kick-ass job at keeping Moroi safe. Most dampires felt it was worth risking their own lives to make sure our kind could still keep having children. Since Moroi usually wanted to have and raise Moroi children, you didn't find a lot of long-term Moroi-Dampire romances. You especially didn't find a lot of Moroi women hooking up with Dampire guys. But plenty of young Moroi men liked fooling around with Dampire women, although those guys usually went on to marry Moroi women. That left a lot of single Dampire mothers, but we were tough and could handle it. However, many Dampire mothers chose not to become guardians in order to raise their children. These women sometimes worked regular jobs with Moroi or humans. Some of them lived together in communities. These communities had a bad reputation. I don't know how much of it was true, but rumors said Moroi men visited all the time for sex, and that some Dampire women let them drink blood while doing it. Blood whores. Regardless, almost all guardians were men, which meant there were a lot more Moroi than guardians. Most Dampire guys accepted that they wouldn't have kids. They knew it was their job to protect Moroi while their sisters and cousins had babies. Some Dampire women, like my mother, still felt it was their duty to become guardians, even if it meant not raising their own kids. After I'd been born, she'd handed me over to be raised by Moroi. Moroi and Dampires start school pretty young, and the academy had essentially taken over as my parent by the time I was 4. Between her example and my life at the academy, I believed wholeheartedly that it was a Dampire's job to protect Moroi. It was part of our heritage, and it was the only way we'd keep going. It was that simple. And that was what made what the Badika's guardian had done so shocking. He'd abandoned his Moroi and run off with another guardian, which meant she'd abandoned her Moroi. They couldn't even have children together, and now two families were unprotected. What was the point? No one cared if teenage Dampires dated, or if adult Dampires had flings, but a long-term relationship? Particularly one that involved them running away. A complete waste. And a disgrace. After a little more speculation on the Badikas, Lyssa and I, left Aaron. As we stepped outside, I heard a funny shifting sound and then something sliding. Too late, I realized what was happening, just as a pile of slush slid off the chapel's roof and onto us. It was early October, and we'd had early snow last night that had started melting almost immediately. As a result, the stuff that fell on us was very wet and very cold. Lissa took the brunt of it, but I still yelped as icy water landed on my hair and neck. A few others squealed nearby, too, having caught the edge of the mini avalanche. "You okay?" I asked her. Her coat was drenched, and her platinum hair clung to the sides of her face.
Yeah, she said through chattering teeth.
I pulled off my coat and handed it to her. It had a slick surface and had repelled most of the water. "Take yours off."
"But you'll be..."
"Take this." She did, and as she slipped on my coat, I finally tuned into the laughter that always follows these situations. I avoided the eyes, instead focusing on holding Lissa's wet jacket while she changed.
"Wish you hadn't been wearing a coat, Rose," said Ralph Sarkozy, an unusually bulky and plump Moroi. I hated him. "That shirt would have looked good wet."
"That shirt's so ugly it should be burned. Did you get that from a homeless person?"
I glanced up as Mia walked over and looped her arm through Aaron's. Her blonde curls were arranged perfectly, and she had on an awesome pair of black heels that would have looked much better on me. At least they made her look taller, I'd give her that. Aaron had been a few steps behind us, but had miraculously avoided being nailed by the slush. Seeing how smug she looked, I decided there'd been no miracles involved. "I suppose you want to offer to burn it, huh?" I asked, refusing to let her know how much that insult bugged me. I knew perfectly well my fashion sense had slipped over the last 2 years.
"Oh, wait. Fire isn't your element, is it? You work with water. What a coincidence that a bunch just fell on us."
Mia looked as if she'd been insulted, but the gleam in her eyes showed that she was enjoying this way too much to be an innocent bystander.
"What's that supposed to mean?"
"Nothing to me, but Ms. Kirova will probably have something to say when she finds out you used magic against another student."
"That wasn't an attack," she scoffed. "And it wasn't me. It was an act of God."
A few others laughed, much to her delight. In my imagination, I responded with, "So is this," and then slammed her into the side of the church. In real life, Lissa simply nudged me and said,
"Let's go."
She and I walked off toward our respective dorms, leaving behind laughter and jokes about our wet states and how Lissa wouldn't know anything about specialization. Inside, I seethed. I had to do something about Mia, I realized. In addition to the general irritation of Mia's bitchiness, I didn't want Lissa to have to deal with any more stress than she had to. We'd been okay this first week, and I wanted to keep it that way. "You know," I said, "I'm thinking more and more that you stealing Aaron back is a good thing. It'll teach Bitch Doll a lesson. I bet it'd be easy, too. He's still crazy about you."
"I don't want to teach anyone a lesson," said Lissa. "And I'm not crazy about him."
"Come on. She picks fights and talks about us behind our backs. She accused me of getting jeans from the Salvation Army yesterday."
"Your jeans are from the Salvation Army."
"Well, yeah," I snorted. "But she has no right making fun of them when she's wearing stuff from Target."
"Hey, there's nothing wrong with Target. I like Target."
"Well, so do I. That's not the point. She's trying to pass her stuff off like it's freaking Stella McCartney."
"And that's a crime?"
I affected a solemn face.
"Absolutely. You've got to take revenge."
"I told you I'm not interested in revenge."
Lissa cut me a sidelong look.
"And you shouldn't be either."
I smiled as innocently as I could, and when we parted ways, I felt relieved again that she couldn't read my thoughts.
"So when's the big cat fight going to happen?"
Mason was waiting for me outside our dorm after I'd parted ways with Lissa. He looked lazy and cute, leaning against the wall with crossed arms as he watched me.
"I'm sure I don't know what you mean."
He unfolded himself and walked with me into the building, handing me his coat, since I'd let Lissa go off with my dry one.
I saw you guys sparring outside the chapel. Have you no respect for the house of God?
I snorted. You've got about as much respect for it as I do, you heathen. You didn't even go. Besides, as you said, we were outside.
And you still didn't answer the question.
I just grinned and slipped on his coat. We stood in the common area of our dorm, a well-supervised lounge and study area where male and female students could mingle, along with Moroi guests. Being Sunday, it was pretty crowded, with those cramming for last-minute assignments due tomorrow. Spying a small empty table, I grabbed Mason's arm and pulled him toward it.
Aren't you supposed to go straight to your room?
I hunkered down in my seat, glancing around warily. There are so many people here today, it'll take them a while to notice me. God, I am so sick of being locked away, and it's only been a week.
I'm sick of it, too. We missed you last night. A bunch of us went and shot pool in the rec room. Eddie was on fire.
I groaned. Don't tell me that. I don't want to hear about your glamorous social life.
All right.
He propped his elbow up on the table and rested his chin in his hand.
Then tell me about Mia. You're just going to turn around and punch her one day, aren't you? I think I remember you doing that at least 10 times with people that pissed you off.
I'm a new, reformed Rose, I said, doing my best impression of demure, which wasn't very good. He emitted a choking sort of laugh. Besides, if I do that, I'll have broken my probation with Kirova. Gotta walk the straight and narrow.
In other words, find some way to get back at Mia that you won't get in trouble for.
I felt a smile tug at the corners of my lips. You know what I like about you, Mace? You think just like I do.
Frightening concept, he replied dryly.
So, tell me what you think of this.
I might know something about her, but I probably shouldn't tell you.
I leaned forward.
Oh, you already tipped me off. You've got to tell me now. It'd be wrong, he teased. How do I know you'd use this knowledge for good instead of evil?
I batted my eyelashes. Can you resist this face? He took a moment to study me.
No, I can't, actually. Okay, here you go. Mia isn't royal.
I slouched back in my chair. No kidding. I already knew that. I've known who's royal since I was 2.
Yeah, but there's more than just that. Her parents work for one of the Drozdov lords.
I waved my hand impatiently. A lot of Moroi worked out in the human world, but Moroi society had plenty of jobs for its own kind, too. Someone had to fill them.
Cleaning stuff. Practically servants. Her dad cuts grass, and her mom's a maid.
I actually had a healthy respect for anyone who pulled a full day's work, regardless of the job. People everywhere had to do crappy stuff to make a living. But, much like with Target, it became another matter altogether when someone was trying to pass herself off as something else. And in the week that I'd been here, I'd picked up on how desperately Mia wanted to fit in with the school elite. No one knows, I said thoughtfully.
And she doesn't want them to. You know how the royals are.
He paused.
Well, except for Lissa, of course. They'd give Mia a hard time over it.
How do you know all this?
My uncle's a guardian for the Drozdovs.
And you've just been sitting on this secret, huh?
Until you broke me. So, which path will you choose, good or evil?
I think I'll give her a grace.
Miss Hathaway, you know you aren't supposed to be here.
One of the dorm matrons stood over us, disapproval all over her face. I hadn't been joking when I said Mason thought like me. He could bullshit as well as I could.
We have a group project to do for our humanities class. How are we supposed to do it if Rose is in isolation?
The matron narrowed her eyes.
You don't look like you're doing work.
I slid over the priest's book and opened it at random. I'd placed it on the table when we'd sat down. We're working on this. She still looked suspicious.
1 hour. I'll give you 1 more hour down here, and I'd better actually see you working.